Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It was only a few weeks ago that Kevin B.F. Burt, a successful and beloved working musician who lives in Coralville, was raising money through a GoFundMe to pay for a trip to the International Blues Challenge in Memphis, Tennessee. Well, friends and fans helped fund the trip, and he surpassed everyone's wildest expectations by winning 3 first-place awards. Kevin Burt is in the studio with me, along with his guitar and his harmonica today. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
It is a pleasure and an honor.
Well, before we get to some music here in just a few minutes, you grew up in Waterloo, Iowa, but music wasn't really your emphasis when you were thinking about the future. You were thinking about football, right?
Yeah, no, I grew up in an athletic family, you know. My brother Kerry played football here at the University of Iowa. Actually, my brother Sean walked on the team for a while. He ended up graduating from Upper Iowa University. Both of them were All-American, strong safeties, athletes out the world. I was a little shorter and rounder than both of them, but I was the founder of my high school's 1,000-pound weightlifting club. That was one thing my brothers didn't do, but
wow.
I thought that I was built for football, and it wasn't to be. You know, my true senior year of my college career, I dislocated my knee, and that put an end to all of the accolades that were coming in my direction for sports. And come to find out, that ended up being a godsend. I got the opportunity to try out for a Canadian football team, the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and when they released me, I moved to Iowa City. Started working. I sent out 7 resumes. Got offered 5 different jobs. Took them all, and then after I started working my brains out, found out I could sing.
So how did that happen? How did you find out at that point in your life that you could sing?
Well, one of the jobs, my degree is actually in human services and psychology, and so one of the jobs that I had was working for the Independent Living Center at the time. It turned the Independent Living Center then turned into the Everett Connor Center for Independent Living, and I believe that it's just Access Center for Independent Living currently. I think that's the name that they've changed it to. But I was sitting in the office doing paperwork one day, and my boss had a Luther Vandross CD playing, and I was singing along with it. She stuck her head in the room and was like, "Boy, you can sing." I was like, whatever. She was like, "No, you know, my son is putting together a blues band. They're looking for somebody to sing. They got, you know, one guy that he does his best, but it's not quite there." And I said, "Well, you know, it's not really my thing." So I put it off. And finally, she was like, "Hey, you know, we're all getting together for dinner. Why don't you come over to my place tonight?" And I'm like, what the heck? I don't have plans. Got over there, and my boss, a lady named Ethel Madison. And Ethel was like, "Well, I ain't getting nothing for dinner, but they're having rehearsal downstairs. Why don't you go down there?"
It was a trick.
So I went down and sang for the fellas, and they kind of stood around and looked at each other when I got done, handed me a book that was about 2 inches thick, and said, "Hey, learn this." And it was all lyrics to blues songs. And so that was my first, you know, get after it kind of thing.
Wow.
So I went from working 5 jobs and doing things with music to 4 jobs in music, 3. In that stretch, I met the lady that eventually became my wife, and down to 2, down to 1, and music, and came home one day, and she was pregnant with our oldest daughter now, Delaney, and said to her, "Baby, I'm thinking about quitting my job, going after music full time." She was real pregnant. She looked at me and said, "It's about time."
Nice.
And so here we are, you know, 19 years later.
Wow.
You know, yeah.
So you started singing. Where did the harmonica and the guitar come in?
Well, a couple weeks after I quit my day job, I told the fellas in the band, I'm quitting my day job. I'm going music full time. And they were just like, hey, all right. Because all of, I think they thought that I'd figure out how tough it was and I'd go back to getting the day, you know, go back to the day job thing. Well, in a short period of time, I had us booked, you know, between 4 and 6 nights a week in about a 4-hour radius of Iowa City. You know, cool thing about Iowa City is we've got major market cities in all directions. Mm-hmm. We're halfway to everywhere in the United States. So it's a cool thing to be a touring artist from Iowa. Well, none of them had quit their day jobs. So weeknight gigs in Chicago, weeknight gigs in Kansas City, you know, we're up at, you know, we get done at 1 in the morning and we're up and on the road at 3:30 so that everybody can get back for work. It just wasn't working. And so they told me, hey, man, we need a break. So I was downtown Iowa City shortly after they had made this thing, had made this comment to me. And literally, like 2 nights before, we had played in Chicago. We opened up for a fella named Long John Hunter. Our band had crossed paths with the Brooks family, Lonnie Brooks. He's a Chicago blues legend. He just passed away. We crossed paths with them on multiple occasions. Lonnie Brooks and Long John Hunter were childhood friends. And so I'm in the green room at Buddy Guy's Legends. That's where we're playing. I was in the green room. In walks Lonnie Brooks. He goes, hey, what you doing here, boy? I'm opening for Mr. Hunter. And he looks at him and goes, hey, Long John, tell him how you guys started playing guitar. And he said, well, my girl I was dating down in Louisiana, you know, when we was growing up, we went to the Juke. And I saw how she reacted to the guy that was on the stage playing guitar. So I said, I could do that. So the next day, I went and bought a guitar. The next Friday, I was on that stage. And I was like, that's a great story. On the way back from Chicago, this is when the band was just like, hey, we can't keep doing this. And I said to Mr. Brooks, hey, man, I don't have to play guitar, man. I got my guys. He goes, okay. Couple
then
days
you didn't
later,
have your guys.
Yeah, a couple days later, I'm sitting in this bar, and it's Shorty's. Now it's the Burgers and Shine is what it's called now, but it was called Baldy's at the time. I'm sitting in there, and the owner walked past me. I said, "Hey, man, you do music in here ever?" He goes, "We don't have room for a band." He goes, "But I do a solo act, man. You doing a solo thing? I'll let you play here." I'm like, "I'm thinking about it." He goes, "When do you want to do it?" I was like, when works for you? He goes, what about next Friday? This was a Thursday. He goes, what about next Friday? I said, okay. So I walked out. I finished my drink. I walked out. I went to a place called the Guitar Foundation. It's no longer here, but it was it was on Lynn Street, right across the street from the Hamburg Inn. I walked over there. There had been a guitar hanging up in this place for 10 years at least. And it had quarter inch of dust on it, and me, and I pointed at it, and I said to the guy, how much for that guitar? And he said, well, I have to look up my price. You know, nobody's ever really asked about it. And I was like, no. You and me standing right here right now, how much for this guitar? He goes, I got to cover my car. I was like, man, it's been hanging for 10 years, man. And finally, I said, I'll give you $100 for that guitar. I was like, no, man, I got to get at least $175. I was like, all right, well, you know, I'll give you $75 for this guitar. He goes, man, you're supposed to come up. I'm like, this guitar been hanging in here, not making you a dime. I want to take a guitar nobody wants. Nobody even plays this guitar. I was like, I want this guitar. He finally goes, all right, how about $125? I said, I'll pay $125, but I need you to tell me, you know, which keys of harmonicas I need to play in these keys. And so he explained it to me. I said, I'll give you $125 for this whole thing. He goes, Kevin, you're killing me. I'm like, you know. So I bought 4 harmonicas and I bought the guitar. And I would sit in my basement. And when my wife would go to bed, I'd go downstairs and I'd mess around with the guitar and I'd mess around with the harmonicas. I got to the show the next Thursday and I realized that I hadn't bought the yoke. I'd never played the two simultaneously.
So to hold the harmonica.
Yeah.
Right?
I'd played the harmonica and I'd played the guitar and I didn't think about it until that moment. So I ran out of the club. I ran out of Shorties and Baldies, and I ran over to the Guitar Foundation. I said, "Hey, man, you got one of them things to hold a harmonica while the guy plays the guitar?" I didn't even know what to call it. He goes, "A yoke?" I go, "Yeah, one of those." He goes, "Right there." So I grabbed it, gave him the money. He goes, "Man, do you know how hard it is to play the harmonica and the guitar at the same time?" I said, "Nope." And I left. Because I'd seen it done before, and so all that was going through my mind is, okay, just make it sound okay. You know, this is your first show. You're faking it until you make it. Just get by, you know. And the cool thing about a guitar is if you know this. You know 25,000 songs. I mean, right there. And then if you add a capo and slide it up, you just multiply it by 12. And so I needed enough noise to sing to. Nobody came to watch me play guitar. Nobody was worried about me playing harmonica at those times, you know, when I first got started. I have a nice voice. I have a unique voice. And that's the part of it that I needed the opportunity to throw out there. And so, yeah, good folks there. Gave me my first show, and then a little place up in Cedar Rapids. I approached them because I knew I had to work consistently. I approached Checkers Tavern about playing a house gig, and told the fella that owned that place, PJ Harrington. I told him, I was like, "Man, can I play here $50 a week every Wednesday?" He looked at me and said, "No, I can't do that. I'll give you
$125. Oh, nice. Hey, we're coming up on a break. Why don't you play us out with a little bit A little bit of You Gone, which is one of the songs that you played at the International Blues Competition.
Darling, my baby, you know I love you, honey, but sometimes you drive me crazy. I just want to be here for you, honey. Just want to keep you safe and warm. But I can't do nothing for you, can I, honey? When you're out there all night long, child, say you're gone. Oh, little girl, little girl, little girl, you're gone, you. You see, I never anticipated, no, no. Honey, baby.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest right now is Kevin B.F. Burt. He is a beloved musician based in Iowa who just broke through after only 20 years of performing and traveling, just broke through in a huge way. Yeah. He went to the International Blues Challenge in Memphis, Tennessee, and brought home 3 first place awards. And Kevin, I have to ask what that means. I mean, you've been performing, you've been traveling all over the world, you've been making a living as a musician, but that sort of breakthrough moment.
Yeah, it's you know, there's been a lot of times in my career that I've been standing just outside the door to that room where there's those folks. And, you know, it's a cool place to be near. All of those folks have been really accepting. It's just, I haven't done what it takes to be in that room. And one of the biggest things is I wanted to be a dad. You know, I wanted to, kids are only kids one time. And if you blink too long, you miss it. And whether you're across the country or across the street, if you're not home, you're not home. And I missed a lot of stuff, but I didn't miss everything. And that's one of the things that I am, you know, it was important for me. You know, I wanted to be there for my girls, and yeah, I also want to be a good husband. I mean, I'm not the best. You know, I've made a ton of mistakes and horrible decisions, but at the end of the day, you know, my wife looks at me most mornings and says, "I love you." You know, Sometimes it's I guess she loves me every day. There's days she don't like me that much. I go that route, you know. But that's reciprocated. There's days that I got one nerve left, and she's standing right next to it with a sharp stick. But we work at it, you know. Nothing's easy, and it's, you know, I live a blessed life from that end of the street. And my youngest daughter, she looked at me, you know, a little while back, and I asked my girls every couple of years, I'd look at them and say, you know, as they were growing up and they understood, you know, I said, yeah, I want daddy to get a regular job so I'm around a lot more. And they would look at each other and look at me and go, what for? You know, this is what you're doing is kind of cool. It makes a difference. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, when you do what you do, they smile, you know, and it's humbling, you know, to know that you're doing what it is that you're supposed to do, you know, when the people that love you most, you know, encourage that, you know. And my wife's been the same way, you know, but I always refer to my daughters, but, you know, my wife has been my biggest supporter and my biggest critic and my, you know, the deepest pool that I draw from, you know, emotionally.
Well, we'll talk more in a couple of minutes about what it means to win 3 first place awards at the International Blues Challenge. But in the wake of this, your version of Eleanor Rigby is getting a whole lot of attention. Can you play a little bit for us?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Won't you take a look at all them lonely people, babe? You got to take a look at all them lonely people. Eleanor Rigby picked up the reins at a church where wedding had been. Lives in a dream, sits at a window, wearing a face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Tell me, where do they all come from? All them lonely people, where do they all belong? Five of McKinsey writing the words to a sermon that no one hear. No one come near. Look at him work now, donning his socks all alone in the dark right there. What does he care? All the lonely people, tell me, where do they all come from? Where they all come from? All them lonely people, where do they all belong? Won't you take a look at all them lonely people, babe? Won't you take a look at all them lonely people? Eleanor Rigby died at the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Five of McKinsey wiping the dirt from his hands as he walked from her grave. Nobody was saved. Now, all the lonely people, tell me, where do they all come from? Where they all come from? Take a look at all.
all them lonely people. See, I know you see them cause they standing right there. Oh, but you want to walk past them with your nose in the air. Won't you take a look at all the lonely people? Do you hear me, mister? These your brothers. Ha! These your sisters. Won't you take a look at all the lonely people? Now, if you'd open up your heart, you just might see a bunch of lonely folks looking just like you and me. Yes, sir. You gotta take a look at all them lonely people.
Kevin B.F. Burt, his version of Eleanor Rigby. That's going crazy on Facebook right now. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, just a few weeks ago, you were raising money on GoFundMe to fund your trip to the International Blues Challenge. You went down there. What were you hoping for? Because this has to be beyond your wildest expectations.
Well, one of the things that I've learned quickly with this is I went down there with hopes to win. What I didn't do is ask myself the question, what if? What if you do? You know, what's the next step? I didn't even think about the other awards that went along with it. They weren't a thing, you know. The whole thing has just been, I mean, I was in a pretty solid shock standing on stage. Because when they said, okay, Kevin, the winner of the Lee Oscar Harmonica Award, top harmonicist here at the International Blues Challenge, Kevin Burt, Central Iowa Blues Society, when they announced my name, I honestly thought, okay, I got the consolation prize. Game on.
Good. That's good.
Yeah. I fared well, you know.
Right.
No ill feelings toward anybody, because everybody that's at this competition, you know, I get told all the time, hey, man, you need to get on The Voice. You need to get on this. You need to do this. And those things, to me, those are game shows. You know, it's a karaoke contest.
Yeah.
This competition is like taking everybody that's ever won one of those and putting them in a competition against wherever it is they live from, and they got to compete against the best in the state or the best in their country and earn their way back to this, you know, after performing and building the name for themselves. This competition is the best representative from each blues society, each state, each country that they can send. It's all champions before they get there. And so, you know, for me, this is kind of a big deal. The one thing is that nobody decided to put it on TV, you know, and but once they gave me once I had earned the harmonica, I was just like, okay, I got the concert. I went kind of back into the back part of the stage, and I was, you know, kind of, you know, talking, giving myself that you did well,
right.
Talk, you know, you're just fine, you know,
you're
this
happy
doesn't
with
change.
This.
Yeah, this isn't what this isn't going to change what it is that you're doing. You're golden. Then I heard him say, you know, from the Central Iowa Blues Society, Kevin Burt again. And I was just like, what? They were giving away a guitar award. That's not me. So I walk back out there, and they point at me and go, come on. I'm like, really? And so I walk out there, and they hand me this cigar box, and I'm, you know, and I'm still in this weird shock, weird spot, because I just watched some people do things with a guitar that my guitar doesn't have those sounds in it. You know, just they're incredible folks. And so for them to hand me this one, I'm like, okay, they really feel bad about me losing. They gave me the double consolation prize. So I walk off the stage, and now I'm positive that I did not win. You know, I'm waiting for him to call somebody else's name so that I don't look as disappointed as I feel. And they said, once again, from the Central Iowa Blues Society. And my eyes got big, my heart sank, my stomach churned, and I'm looking, And everybody around me is going, go on, man. I'm just standing there going, You know? And so I walked out in shock.
Wow.
I really did. I didn't expect it. And come to find out, in the 34-year history, I'm the first solo artist to sweep all three categories in the competition. And so that was amazing, you know. And then I've found out since then that, you know, not only that, I also was the first solo artist to ever get perfect scores. And,
wow.
And two judges gave me perfect scores on the day. And so those two things, to win the contest is remarkably affirming, you know, but to have people that are that, because the judges for the contest are people that are at a level that it's that's beyond where we are, you know, where I am in my career, you know, standing on that stage. To have those individuals look at you and go, yeah, you know, this guy's doing it right. It's remarkably affirming. It gives you a different level of confidence.
So you hadn't asked your question yourself, what if I win? What has it been like? I mean, you obviously have a lot of big decisions to make about what opportunities you reach out and grab at this point. What's been happening?
It's been a cool tornado, you know, because there's so much going on. And it's just it just keeps happening daily. You know, I used to think that a busy day for me was I had, you know, 15 emails that I needed to answer, you know, kind of thing. I needed to book a couple of shows, you know, see, you know, make sure my routing was cool within this 4-hour circle that I kind of have drawn. Now I'm trying to coordinate making sure that I can fly to this international festival and get back to do this one that's in, you know, upstate New York. I'm trying to make sure that multiple festivals aren't overlapping with each other. I'm trying to still make sure that I can honor the shows that are on my books already locally, but talking to people, making sure that they understand, hey, if I get the opportunity to play in, you know, Las Vegas, I need to go play in Las Vegas. And, you know, I've got a handful of things that are already booked, a handful of things that are promised, and it's good. You know, I'm going to be traveling a lot more than I've ever traveled in my life, a lot more than I ever thought I'd be traveling in my life. And so I'm about to get used to what it feels like to be in a plane a lot more than sitting in my car and driving there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a new thing. You know, having to factor in, well, it's going to cost me this much to fly, and for places to go. Okay, yeah, we understand. You know, that's cool. You know?
So, how about recording? Is there an album in the works?
Absolutely. I've got one of the things. There's a part of the Iowa Blues Challenge prize package. Is some recording time at a little place called Junior's Motel out in Western Iowa, and I want to use that time, but I've also been offered the opportunity, and nothing's in stone, to record at a pretty lucrative. They've got a big name out of Minneapolis studio, and until that gets kind of locked in and for sure, you know, I'm kind of holding that one under my hat, but. And there's a handful of record labels that are looking at me that, you know, I've always wanted to, I've always hoped that if that opportunity existed, it would be with, you know, there's a handful of labels that I really, really like. I like what they've done for artists and with artists, and not every label is that way,
yeah.
You know?
Well, Kevin, this couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Congratulations.
Thank you
it's
so much.
So exciting.
No, I appreciate that.
And we're nearly out of time. I hope you'll come back when an album comes out or another time.
Anytime you want. You know, everybody here has been remarkably cool. So, I, and the fact that this is, you know, this is in my backyard too, you know, this is neighborhood. So, and that part of it for me, that's huge. You know, I love this. I've done radio interviews now. In Texas, or for radio stations from Texas, the UK, Australia, Houston, upstate New York, and Colorado. And
wow.
I got a whole bunch more coming. So it's nice to be home. You know,
well, I know you're a dad first. So will you play us out today with a song you wrote for your daughter called Your Smile?
Yep. This is a song I wrote for both my babies when they were 18 months and 4, and now they're about to turn 19 and 15. So this song's called Your Smile. Hope you like it. I want to see you every day and night just to make sure everything's all right, because you know you, your daddy's little girls, and you know that daddy always wants to be there for your babies and make sure everything is all right in your world. I want to hold you in my arms, keep you safe and warm, don't you know you, you got your daddy screaming out loud each and every time you're out there, baby's doing what you do. You know you make your daddy so proud. You make my life worthwhile. You make my life worthwhile. Oh, babies, when I see you smile, na 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 na, I wanna hold you in my arms.